Okay, I'm going to keep the introductions here to a minimum, primarily for the information of those that will be listening to this later on as it goes on to the ARSC website as MP3 cast for those that couldn't be here, and hopefully references in the future. Our next speaker is Rebecca Freund-Schwartz.
Roberta,
I do call you Rebecca periodically, I don't know why. Excuse me, for the record, no pun intended. Roberta Freund-Schwartz is an associate professor of historical musicology at the University of Kansas in Lawrence, which I had the chance to visit in February, and her areas are quite wide. She goes from the Renaissance and African-American music, music of Spain, rock and roll, blues. I met her when she did the Sister Roberta. Sister Rosetta Tharpe paper, number of years ago. She is an author of the Ashgate book, How Britain Got the Blues, which won the 2008 ARSC Awards for Excellence. She's also working on a monograph about the Chicago or Hokum blues of the 1930s, and her topic is Jazz Me Blues, Chicago's South Side Jazz Bands, the City Style, and the Thin Blue, parentheses, S line. Roberta?
Looks better in writing.
Give me a second to pop up my PowerPoint here. See, it looks much better written down. Oh, could I have? Thank you. So in 20s and 30s Chicago, local jazz bands and blues artists explored the thin blue line that separated the two genres above and beyond the well-known collaborations of classic blues singers and jazz musicians. Such musical cross-fertilization was almost inevitable given the geography in which they operated. So in the 20s, Chicago was the capital of the African-American entertainment world, and more specifically, the Stroll. At the heart of Chicago's Black Belt on the Upper South Side. There we go. The Stroll was about 3 miles long and less than a mile wide, running along South State Street, where cafes, nightclubs, speakeasies, brothels, music stores, and vaudeville houses were densely concentrated. According to Eddie Condon, the midnight air on State Street was so full of music that if you held up a horn, the breeze would play it. While both were concentrated on the Stroll, jazz and blues musicians mostly worked in different venues. In the mid to late 20s, most jazz bands played in ballrooms, movie theaters, small clubs, and vaudeville houses, commonly as part of a stage show that included dancers, variety artists, and vocalists. Their male blues compatriots, on the other hand, primarily worked in small bars, speakeasies, and rent parties and buffet flats, which served as temporary entertainment venues when the clubs closed. Nonetheless, it's clear from their recorded output that the South Side musicians heard each other. Jazz musicians were no strangers to rent parties, and blues players were likewise well aware of most popular local jazz bands. These tendencies were probably more pronounced in Chicago because by the mid-20s, it was the center of the nation's race recording industry. All the major race labels had offices in Chicago, and most primarily recorded in the city or its environs, by which I'm extending out to Grafton and Richmond. Records were big business everywhere. At their peak in 1927, total race record sales were about 10 million. But particularly so in the Windy City. There were nearly as many music stores and record dealers on the Stroll as clubs, and paperboys on the South Side actually carried records with them to sell along their routes. Clarence William, who owned a couple of music shops on the Stroll, said that when blues records came in, people would form a line twice around the block, and sometimes there were even bootlegs that were sold in the alley for $4 or $5 a piece. The locally based jazz bands, by which I mean those who were primarily based in Chicago and regularly performing in the Black and Tan, clubs, cabarets, and dance halls on the South Side, needed to appeal to the same audience that voraciously consumed these records. Likewise, blues musicians combined characteristics of contemporary jazz with regional blues styles and syncopated dance music from the folk tradition to forge a new type of blues that was relevant to the increasingly urban population, and borrowing Lonnie Johnson's term, I call it the city style. It's fair to ask whether these surviving recordings actually reflect the kind of music that would have been played in the clubs along the Stroll. And I posit that they can be, but it requires that we look beyond the most familiar tracks and to those that don't neatly fit in a genre. For example, we all know the gems of the Louis Armstrong and the Hot Five sessions, your heebie-jeebies, your West End blues, but we often overlook numbers like He Likes It Slow, with vocals by the vaudeville team Butterbeans and Susie, precisely the type of act that Armstrong and other members of the Five accompanied at luxe cabarets like the Dreamland and the Vendome.
He likes it slow when he goes today. He likes it slow when he goes to pray. Just like a snail, that man of mine. I never let the hurry, I just take my time.
Such entertainments provided jazz and blues musicians with a common vocabulary, which also included the blues-based tropes of minstrel and medicine shows, as well as African-American folk ensembles and popular dances. One example is the Jug and Washboard. One example is the Jug and Washboard tradition that was deeply rooted in the South and spread via minstrel and medicine shows. Much of the material was originally rag or blues-based, but a great many jug bands also incorporated elements of New Orleans jazz. The Old Southern Jug Band, a popular novelty act on the vaudeville circuit, cut two sides for Vocalion in 1924. Later that year, Jimmy O'Brien, a clarinetist who led the band at Joe's Paradise, created his famous original washboard band. The aggregate, which also included Southside regulars, pianist Jimmy Blythe and drummer Jasper Taylor, made two sides for Paramount in late 1924. The band, under 10 different names, cut 23 additional sides in just 1925 alone and dozens more before 1930. Johnny Dodds played with several different Jug and Washboard ensembles, as did Jimmy Blythe, Louis Armstrong, and most of the city's other hot jazz musicians. A good example of their style is Shake That Thing by O'Brien's original washboard band in 1926. Now, Shake That Thing wasn't an original composition by O'Brien. It was, in fact, a hit record of 1925, written and recorded by the progenitor of the city style, Papa Charlie Jackson. Nor was the original washboard band the first outfit to record the song. It was waxed by Louis Armstrong in his Hot Five under the title Georgia Grind, as a piano roll by Blythe, and by the Dixieland Thumpers, who were Blythe, Nanny Dominique, and Johnny and Baby Dodds, as Sock That Thing. The Hot Five sessions also included Big Butter and Eggman, what we'd likely now call an answer song to another Jackson hit, Butter and Eggman. The ensemble recorded their version in November 1926, and it was featured a few months earlier in the fall review at the Sunset Club, where Armstrong and his Stompers were the band in residence.
Now, Mama, I'm your Big Butter and Eggman, but I'm different, honey, but I'm from way down in the South. Now, listen, baby, I'll buy you all the pretty things that you think you need, as long as I can keep this cornet up to my mouth. Oh, I'll play you a little minor in G. And if you say it's necessary, baby, well, I'll even hit high C.
Armstrong's broad vocal approach is typical of the vaudeville device called hokum, an obvious brand of comedy with suggestions of in-group familiarity. We know from contemporary reports that such routines were common in the black and tans like the Dreamland and the Sunset. In fact, Armstrong has a great story about using trumpets to mimic babies as part of an act. But on record, hokum is usually heard in jug and washboard combos. A good example is Get the L On Down the Road, a nice local Chicago-based double entendre by Bill Johnson's Louisiana Jug Band, with vocals by the vaudeville blues singer Frankie Half Pint Jackson.
Have your hand, get the L on down the road.
Don't worry.
Get your hat in your hand and get the L on down the road. Don't knock a knot on your head, you look like a party toad. Any hokum.
Johnson was the leader of the original Creole Orchestra, which after it relocated to Chicago in 1918, was renamed King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band. When they split in 23, Johnson led his own band for a number of years, but played bass on blues records and in blues-oriented jug bands like Tampa Red's Hokum Jug Band. Guitarist Tampa Red was one of the biggest stars of the city style. He and pianist Georgia Tom Dorsey launched a craze for Hokum blues with their racy 1928 hit, It's Tight Like That.
Listen there, folks, one thing, a little song. Don't get mad, but don't mean no harm. You know, tight like that. Beat a lump on, boy, tight like that. Beat a lump on, ooh, you hear me talk to you. I mean, a tight like that.
The song was an instant hit. The record sold so quickly in Chicago that a Hokum Jug Band cover with vocals by Jackson was waxed within days of its commercial release. Like Shake That Thing, It's Tight Like That was simply too popular for working jazz bands in Chicago to ignore. Walter Barnes and his Real Creoleans, the territory band based in Chicago, recorded a fairly straightforward homophonic arrangement about a month later. Armstrong Savoy Ballroom 5 cut a Hokum version called Tight Like This, so yes, Hokumception. But the version by Jimmy Noone and his Apex Club Orchestra is the most typical example of a blues arrangement by Chicago jazz bands. The melody's adopted as the head, usually played as a melodic variation, and the other instruments collectively improvise. Johnny Dodds is best known as the clarinetist on the Hot 5 and Hot 7 recordings, but he enjoyed a long and active career in Chicago until his death in 1940. Dodds, usually working with his brother, Drummer Baby, led the house band at the venerable Kelly Stables until 1930 and headlined virtually every other club on the Stroll during the following decade. Dodds played on a number of blues records, and most were classic blues singers like Sippy Wallace, but he also cut four tracks with the popular city blues guitarist Blind Blake, along with percussionist Jimmy Bertrand, another stalwart of Chicago jazz bands in the 20s. Though not heard on this clip, because I find it particularly irritating, for reasons that would be fascinating to entertain, this track also includes Hoagy Carmichael on Penny Whistle. How that happened, I have no idea. There's no evidence that Blake himself played with any jazz bands in Chicago, but he did record with other ensembles. Later that year, he waxed Sweet Papa Lowdown, a breakdown that bears a striking melodic resemblance to Papa Charlie Jackson's Drop That Sack of 1925.
Oh, please, while I tap it. Sweet Papa Lowdown.
The trumpet player here is Punch Miller, another New Orleans expat who moved to Chicago in 1926 when the city was already teeming with gifted hornmen. He worked steadily in a succession of bands that played the smaller clubs on the Stroll, but appeared only on two jazz sides before 1940 and only once under his own name, accompanying Frankie Half Pint Jackson with his Punch's Delegates of Pleasure on several Hokum blues sides. We don't know if the Delegates of Pleasure ever performed outside of the studio, but Miller certainly knew Jackson. It's hard to fathom any musician working on the Stroll who wouldn't have known Jackson, who frequented both sides of the blues line and worked at most of the clubs in Chicago for nearly two decades. He was a jack of all entertainment trades. He started as a singer in musical reviews on vaudeville, and he also emceed, choreographed, and produced the shows. He worked with top-notch bands like King Oliver's and Carol Dickerson's at the Sunset, where he enjoyed long residencies when not touring and making blues records of his own compositions. But by the early 30s, Jackson was primarily leading jazz bands in Chicago. He played primarily the Small Zeppelin Inn, but he and his hot shots were also heard on weekly local radio. Fannett, which Jackson recorded as a Hokum blues side in 1926, became the band's theme song after a little bit of transformation.
A good gal, and her name was Sue. She says to make me love you, honey, tell you what to do, you gotta.
noted, the Cab Calloway got his start in Chicago as an MC at the Sunset Cafe, crafting his jive patter, flamboyant stage presence, and even his vocal style on the previous MC, Frankie Halfpint Jackson. By 1930, the effects of the Great Depression had hit Chicago's entertainment industry. The movie palaces all stopped using live music, the vaudeville houses closed, and even many of the small clubs were shuttered. And most of the top jazz bands and musicians moved on to New York. Moreover, the bottom fell out of the race record industry. And while there was only one month where no new race records were issued, just July 1933, the sonic record of Southside Chicago for 1931 to 1933 is largely absent. When the industry staggered back onto its feet in 1934, we hear a very different Southside and from both sides of the blue line. Tampa Red's a good example. Though most famous for his hokum blues, he was a fine and sophisticated slide guitarist and had a way with wistful 12-bar blues. But his first studio recording after a 21-month hiatus in March of 1934 is radically different. His fluid slide lines are replaced by swinging syncopated cording, pianist Black Bob is playing blues-inflected slide, and Red plays a rudimentary horn line on kazoo. Not true, it only deviates a little bit from the melody, but let's be fair, the man's also playing the guitar.
I'll kill your soul and die your spirit to move. I got a 3220 on a 44 frame and sure can't miss you when I got dead aim you down. And I'll die your spirit to move. Playboy out.
Tampa Red was during those 21 months, but we have a pretty good idea of what was responsible for his stylistic change.
To the jazz of old Duke and old Calloway, we can love, kiss, and dance till the break of day. I don't care if it's sleeting, snowing, or raining. We'll be ready when that Harlem fun began.
All styles of blues were recorded until the end of the decade. The most successful artists, like Red, began recording with bands, usually a trumpet, clarinet, or saxophone, or some combination thereof, piano, string bass, and drums. By 1936, Red was recording with his Chicago Five, his chief competitor, Big Bill Brunsey, with the Memphis Five, and other blues singers with their own geographically named aggregates. More often than not, they incorporate tropes of jazz, such as scat singing, extended solos, swinging eighth-note rhythmic foundations, jive lingo, and references to popular swing dances. Virtually every Chicago blues artist recorded a song about truckin', granted, a subject rich with possibilities for double entendre.
Truckin' mother for you, don't you know? Boy, she's a truckin' mother for you, don't you know? She's a truckin' mother for you, here from Tennessee.
Were mostly second-wave New Orleans expats, like Miller, who were playing small club dates around town or touring with territory bands, but based in Chicago and looking for work. Clarinetist Odell Rand and Arnett Nelson, trumpeters Alfred Bell, Lee Collins, and Herb Morand, and the saxes were mostly local guys. Morand co-led one of the best-selling ensembles of the decade, the Harlem Hamfats, a seven-piece group that included two guitars, piano, string bass, trumpet, clarinet, and drums, and fronted by Kansas Joe McCoy, who made dozens of top-selling blues discs with Memphis Minnie before 1932. The Hamfats combined blues, Chicago, and swing jazz to produce gutsy proto-jump blues that were immensely popular. And here's McCoy doing Weed Smoker's Dream.
She's a bad woman, fits on every hand. She's a trickin' mother for you every. Why she lying, why don't you do now? Like a millionaire, put your stuff on the market and make a million too.
That melody sounds familiar. He also wrote a variant called Why Don't You Do Right that I think most of you have heard. Well, one of the bands that made versions of Hamfat songs were the State Street Swingers, a copy band, basically, led by multi-instrumentalist Junie Cobb, who, with his Grains of Corn Orchestra, played a lot of the newer clubs that opened on the Stroll after 34. The unit was a true jazz-blues hybrid. The horns, mostly jazz guys, and the entire rhythm section, including Big Bill Brunzi and Washboard Sam blues guys. And they recorded both older Hokum blues and new compositions like Oh Red. It's almost impossible to tell whether similar fare is being performed at the clubs on the Stroll. Largest clubs mostly hosted nationally famous swing bands for limited residencies. And very few of the bands that played in the smaller clubs actually recorded except for Noon and Dodds. So if there was a dominant sound of Southside Chicago jazz in the late 30s, we've lost it to posterity. However, a number of the bands we do know of, Sammy Price and his Texas Bluesicians, King Colfax and Tommy Powell and his Heidi Hoboys, emerged in the mid-1940s as rhythm and blues bands, which suggests that the Hamfats and the Swingers had an impact on jazz styles as well. The exceptions to this lacuna, though, are the number of small combos being led by blues players. Lonnie Johnson, leading his swing trio at the Four Deuces. Lovin' Sam Thaird, who wrote King Oliver's Louis Armstrong's famous "I'll Be Glad When You're Dead, You Rascal You." Was a featured performer, and Albert Ammons and his trio, the Rhythm Kings, played at virtually every club on the Stroll. And their styles are really different, so it's hard to talk about trends, but they mostly lean toward incorporating a lot of contemporary jazz elements. Granted, that depends on how you classify boogie-woogie, but it did start as a blues piano style. So if I've got time, just because it's a fascinating artifact of this era, okay, I've got 1 minute. To play a little bit of Lonnie Johnson's trio, recorded live at Squares Boulevard Lounge in 1940, and this is him doing More Rhythm. Cut him off. But while the lasting impact of these explorations of the thin blue line is most prominent in post-war rhythm and blues and urban blues, the dialogue between the tightly knit jazz and blues communities on Chicago's South Side during the 20s and 30s had a significant influence on style and repertoire in both genres during the heyday of the race record industry. Thank you.